For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
On Athens Sports Radio, 960 The Ref. Duelist Junkyard Dogs. Duelist Junkyard Dogs. They'll hit ya. They'll knock ya. The whole rat off and sock.
All right, it's the morning show presented by St. Mary's Healthcare System. David Johnston, Logan Booker along with you. Second half kickoff here. James Brown and the great Vince Dooley.
I mean, you hear this on a Wednesday morning, you know it's time for some talking some dogs.
Brandon Adams, the host of Dog Nation Daily, joins us as he does this time every Wednesday. B.A., good morning, sir. How are you?
I'm doing well. I hope you guys are doing well also.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right, so when you take your alcohol into Sanford Stadium, do you have a flask or do you conceal it? What do you do? I'm joking. It's funny. We were talking this morning, you know, in the announcement coming out yesterday about Georgia not selling alcohol at any of its venues in the non-premium seats. And now there's kind of become two different divides here where there's the element of should it be sold at all? Yes or no? And then there's also now an element of, hey, wait, why do the rich people get catered to and not just the regular paying fans? So now we get like two different things going on here.
So here's my theory on this, and maybe y'all can either confirm this or deny this. As you said, there are two different camps. There's a camp who's kind of glad that the alcohol is not going to be sold in the common areas, and there's that group of folks who would have liked to have been able to go buy a beer at a concession stand in Sanford Stadium. My assumption is, and I don't know if your own evidence would back this up, but my assumption is the people who don't want alcohol commonly available in Sanford Stadium feel more strongly about it than the people who do, because, as you kind of joked at the start of our conversation, people who want alcohol in the stadium have been making other considerations for that now going back for decades, and so they're just kind of used to life without it being available in the concession stand. It seems like the passion on this rests with the people who kind of want to prohibit the alcohol more so than with the folks who want to make it readily available. Is that y'all's experience from talking to your own listeners?
I mean, it just depends. I mean, that's the thing. And you could ask, I don't know, five people and get five different kind of perspectives on it. And
yeah.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry to cut you off, but one thing I don't understand is what the big deal is. I mean, we see a lot of alcohol prevalent around the campus on game day Saturdays anyway. What's the difference in also selling some at the concession stand? I don't quite understand what that's about. I don't know if it's a thing where, you know, Georgia doesn't want to take full responsibility for the level of drunkenness that's, you know, in the stadium, and if you start selling it, you're going to have a little bit more of an obligation there. I don't know if this is like an insurance thing. I'd love to know what the real story is behind the decision to be as restrictive with it as they are, because, as you said, with the, you know, the 200 level McGill Society donors who've given, 100,000 or more, in some cases 250,000 or more, I mean, you might as well not make it available to anybody if you're going to just carve out such a tiny subset of people to be able to enjoy this.
It just feels like to me it's more of a timing thing where I don't think Georgia is necessarily saying we're not going to do this down the road. It's just a matter of there's a lot of moving parts that have to be taken care of to put this in place, and to have it basically in 80 days is kind of asking a lot. And maybe I'm wrong on that, but I think eventually it's going to happen. It's just – maybe it's something that's going to be really hard to get done in a couple of months. But yeah, it is kind of weird when, you know, there's so many people, not everybody, I don't want to throw everybody in the group, but when there's a majority, and when I say majority, I'm talking 50.1% or more of people that are drinking before games, and then all of a sudden it's like, well, why is it okay? Everybody, no one really cares if you're drinking before the game, you know, but to sell it in the stadium is a little bit different. I don't know. I'm not sure. It doesn't bother me. I mean, it's just me personally. If they sold beer and wine or even, you know, cocktails at a Georgia game, if that's what they want to do, that's fine with me. But again, that's my own personal opinion with all of that.
Well, listen, I mean, as I've kind of joked about before, some of these corridors in Sanford Stadium are so small that even if they did have beer for sale in the concession stand, you can't get to some of these concession stands anyway, especially if you're on the two sidelines. I mean, a lot of those concession stands are really, really difficult to get to. So ultimately, it might not make that big of an impact one way or another because these aren't the easiest lines to traverse just to get up, get a hot dog and a Coke as it stands now.
Well, and that's part of what I was talking about things that have to kind of be taken care of that might not, you know, that wouldn't be so easy to do in a 2 month span to try to figure out logistics for things. I mean, you gotta have bidding to just see whose products would be sold in the stadium. I mean, that's not something you just do overnight.
And one more point on this, and I'll admittedly say I don't know what I'm talking about when I say this, but you know, I do sneak over to the concession stand out of the press box every now and then, and what you mostly see are volunteers in some cases working these concession stands. You know, it benefits the band. It benefits the, you know, whatever, high school, whatever.
Yep.
Start selling beer. My guess is you wouldn't be able to do that anymore because I think you have to be 18 to serve beer, don't you?
I think why you would just have to have that would just be its own separate thing. Things would have to be sold that would have to be sold separately. I don't think you could do that with, like you said, the volunteer groups.
Yeah, that's a good point.
All right, Brandon, let's hate on some Gators and love on some Dogs. I hear you're good at doing that. So another commitment this week, Josh Braun, the offensive tackle out of, I think it's Live Oak, Florida. But I'm going to ask you real quick to put on a conspiracy hat, a big tinfoil hat, if you don't mind. It seems like, at least in my eyes and a lot of others, now earlier this week, I think it was the same day, Florida had a 2020 defensive back, Joel Williams, 4-star, decommit from the program on the same day that Georgia gets the commitment from Josh Braun. Is it just me, or does it feel like whenever Florida gets bad news, it's kind of immediately followed by some good news for Georgia? Is there something to read into this, or is this just dumb timing in a way?
No, I think that's a really fun thing to consider. I mean, obviously the Warren, you know, the Brinson stuff was a devastating blow to Florida, and, you know, when Georgia gets the Mekhi Shermann good news, that also came on the heels of some bad news for Florida, so I think it's pretty obvious right now that Georgia is really beating up on Florida recruiting trail, including, as you said, getting Braun, another guy out of that state of Florida, which a lot of Gators fans would have loved to have had as an offensive lineman. I mean, right now, the domination for Georgia in comparison to Florida is thorough. And it's one of the reasons why I remain skeptical, and people can take this with a grain of salt if they want, especially if a non-Georgia fan would happen to be listening right now. But people can take this with a grain of salt if they want, but one of the reasons why I don't buy the idea that Florida's got momentum on the field is because I genuinely believe that success leaves clues. And if Florida was on its way to being even better than it was a year ago and being a real threat to Georgia, I think the recruits, the ones invited to the inside of a program, to see the inner workings of a program, I think they'd be the first to know. The fact that you see recruits running from Florida's 2020 class or not considering Florida for the class of 2020, I think that leads you to believe that the media narrative that's out there, that Dan Mullen, you know, rebuilding Florida into something similar to what it would have been back in the Urban Meyer era, maybe the Steve Spurrier era, the most important constituency in college football, the current recruits for the class of 2020, they don't believe that. I think that we should take them at their word on that. A lot of this Florida talk is total exaggeration and something that we're not going to see evidence of on the field.
Now, speaking of recruiting, a really big weekend, a certain 5-star running back out of California, who I think is very high on everybody's list for obvious reasons, he'll be in Athens. What do you know about previewing this, and what does it mean to Georgia to really make a good impression? And correct me if I'm wrong, is this his official visit he's taking this weekend?
Yeah, this is his official visit. He took an unofficial visit for G-Day. He'll take his official visit here this weekend. I just came out in the last 24 hours. He's also going to Alabama next. That shouldn't be a huge surprise. You know,
they had previously said that the Milton camp, they were going to take all four of their official visits. So taking the Alabama visit, I don't think is a big surprise one way or another. I think the challenge in deciphering the stuff involving Milton, and you know, I, as much as anybody, have chronicled the positive connections Milton seems to have with Georgia, and there's no denying a good number of those exist. But it's worth pointing out, to be fair and balanced here for a moment, people in Columbus, Ohio feel very much the same way. I didn't hear quite as much chatter coming out of the LSU visit this past weekend, but the Milton family has tried to maintain a sense of, I don't know if objectivity is the right word, or just balance, where they've treated all four of Milton's finalists as if they were all equal here. So Georgia fans will probably go into this visit weekend for Milton feeling very good about it, and probably will have reasons to feel even better about it when it's over, because these visits always seem to go well. But it's worth noting that other people also feel good about Milton, and it's just a matter of kind of figuring out what's going to happen next. All that said, I do think that Georgia sits in a good spot for Milton, just based on things that I've been told or things that I've read, or you know, kind of everything you add into all of this. I don't think Georgia's in a bad spot for Milton at all, but Georgia's not the only program that probably feels that way.
You talked about Milton on your show yesterday. You also brought up Zach Evans as well, and those two kind of making some Twitter interactions with some of these great wall of Georgia offensive linemen that Sam Pittman is reeling in. You have to all things considered, the recruitment of a running back, I would assume that showing them the offensive line that will be protecting them and making holes for them is a major part of that sell, and that certainly you would like to think plays in Georgia's favor with both of these guys.
Yeah, I would think it does. I mean, one of the things you see, and this is especially true with Milton because he's just been a lot more open and public with his recruitment than Zachary Evans has probably been, but you know, they are deliberate in how they go about this. They're looking at track record with previous running backs. They're looking at, you know, what the program has now. They're looking at the availability for playing time, obviously. And so those big offensive linemen are going to get the notice of guys like Milton and Evans, and the Braun commitment's the latest example of that. And what's kind of cool, if you're a Georgia fan, is you've got some of these linemen who are already in the fold. Tate Ratledge is a big example of this. Akiolo Gunby is another kind of example of this, who are kind of touting for Georgia, to Evans and Milton. And that's kind of a nice, fun thing to kind of watch play out. It's too early to know what kind of impact that's going to have on Milton or Evans, or Milton and Evans. Too early to know that, but certainly Georgia is using the success of Sam Pittman to impact what Del McGee's trying to do with these running backs here, and I think that's a pretty effective message. I don't know how, you know, I can't tell you for sure what Milton and Evans are eventually going to do, but I think if you're a Georgia fan, I think you've got to feel pretty confident about the pitch that Georgia's able to make to both these guys.
Talking with Brandon Adams from Dog Nation Daily. You can hear it Monday through Friday right here on 960 The Ref, noon to 1. Are you outraged, or are you bewildered, or what's your, you know, what's a good adjective to describe you over the situation with Luke Ford and the transfer portal and who gets to sit out and who doesn't?
Yeah, maybe I'm just south of outrage, because at this point in time, we've seen sort of inexplicable behavior from the NCAA. I mean, I don't like the fact that they seem to be kind of a moving target in terms of, here, this guy gets this and this guy doesn't get that, and we have our reasons, and you know, we'll take all these things under consideration. You know, a kind of standard response to these kinds of requests, you know, for immediate eligibility, either giving everybody one free pass or something along those lines would be a lot better for me. I mean, privately, and this is not going to be a popular statement, but I think it's worth mentioning here. Privately, I think there are probably a lot of coaches around college football who were glad to see Ford denied eligibility, even if that's kind of an unjust thing to have happen, because I think it may serve to disincentivize some people from entering the transfer portal. So I think there may have been a few high fives under the table from some coaches when the NCAA ruled the way that it did against Ford, even though, as Georgia fans, most people don't like the way that Ford was treated here. A lot of coaches probably will say, okay, maybe this will return a sense of sanity to this transfer process. But, I mean, I think we're all going to look around and say, why was Ford treated so heavy-handedly while, you know, guys like, you know, Tate Martell and certainly Justin Fields were essentially given a free pass to do whatever they wanted to? That seems incongruent, I guess, to use a bigger word than I should probably be using. That seems kind of incongruent, but But this is just the NCAA. They seem to treat every case differently, and that lack of consistency, I think, hurts their credibility.
Talking with Brandon Adams, the host of Dog Nation Daily. It's definitely weird. And, you know, the thing is, and I get the players' rights. I mean, I understand that too, but coaches might gripe a little bit about, you know, roster management. I think it's a legitimate gripe too, because it certainly is one of those things where they've got their job to do, and they got a scholarship limit, and they got to figure out what's going on with that. So, unfortunately, it's one of these. I see both sides of this, and I wonder what rules might be coming up here on the horizon with what's going on with the thing we now call the transfer portal.
I will tell you, you know, I think for a lot of us, when we have this conversation, we make the comparison between Ford and Fields, the two players involved. But I think the biggest difference in the situation may not be the players themselves. It's the fact that Fields is going to Ohio State, which is like as big and macro a college football power as you can have. Illinois, by comparison, is just not. And I think that the NCAA cowers to these major programs. Frankly, Georgia probably benefited with that from Demetrius Robertson. Had Robertson transferred from Georgia to Cal, I don't know that he gets the same treatment from the NCAA that he got going from Cal to Georgia, because Georgia's just a big college football program. Look at the leniency the UNC basketball program has gotten in the NCAA over the academic stuff, and compare that to Missouri in football, or, you know, Ole Miss in football for some slightly different stuff. You know, the NCAA just seems to have very different standards for treatment when it comes to major revenue-producing programs, and programs are a little farther down the drop. And Ford may ultimately be done a disservice by the fact that he was transferring to kind of a lower-level Power 5 program more than anything else.
Yeah, you'd like to think that wouldn't be an issue, but, I mean, who knows? That's the weird thing. Yeah, if it were Michigan or Ohio State, is that different than Illinois? By the way, so the Dogs minus 25 against Vandy. We're starting to get some numbers on that. Does that sound about right to you?
Yeah, that sounds about right. I would have said somewhere between like 17, 24 points. So a good, healthy point spread. That seems about right. My guess is that Georgia kind of holds back a little bit in terms of, I don't think you unleash Zamir White in a big way in that game necessarily. And so I don't know that Georgia's going to fire all its weapons necessarily in that game. Some of its freshman wide receivers that may, you know, kind of tug back on the reins on just a bit. So you can do with that what you will when it comes to point spread. But that seems about right.
All right, B.A. Good talking to you, my man. What do you got cooking for the show today?
We'll talk a little bit more recruiting. We'll kind of dive more into this Milton thing. Keely Ringo's got a top five coming out, five-star cornerback. We'll kick that around. Some interesting stuff from ESPN on Jordan Davis we'll have some fun with. And just try to figure out where all this is heading for the Dogs here in 2019.
I mean, we're should we be doing, let's say today is 80 days until kickoff. We need to get a countdown for media days, for Kirby's appearance at media days, just to kind of make it seem closer. I don't know.
There you go. There you go.
All right, Brandon. Thanks, my man. Look forward to hearing you. You too, my man.
All right.
Brandon Adams, the host of Dog Nation Daily. You can hear it right here every day, or every Monday through Friday, I should say, noon to 1 on 960 The Ref.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.